No, Portugal.
Portugal?
Yes, oh, so Lisbon.
Fala português.
Fala português. Oh, awesome. That's awesome.
Um pouco.
Oh.
I speak a better Spanish, though.
Oh, también hablo español.
Sí, pero el interview no.
Sí, en inglés.
La entrevista.
Yeah. In English, obviously.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay. Oh, so it's recording already. Arthur, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me.
Yes.
So my first, my first question is going to be very straightforward. So you got into Bitcoin around 2013.
Yes.
How do you see the field evolving? How do you see Bitcoin evolving since 2013?
Yes. Just for the records, the company was founded.
Yes.
The company was founded. The founder got into Bitcoin 2010-11. And he worked actually at Credit Suisse those days, and he proposed the project to the bank, Credit Suisse, and as such the bank denied and said no, and he stepped out, founded Bitcoin Suisse, because it was Credit Suisse and it was Bitcoin, and there was only Bitcoin those days, right?
Exactly. Yep.
And then the company was founded, a few people only, for many, many years, the famous Valley of Death, they survived.
Yes.
Because the timing was not so perfect. August 2013, I think Bitcoin was approaching $1,000 very soon, if not already. And then right after 2014, Mt. Gox collapsed. And then it was one of those crashes in Bitcoin where it really went down fast from 1,000 to, I think, 200 something.
Yes.
And it stayed there for a while.
A long time,
And you really needed to be an enthusiast to believe. Now, as we have seen in technology, with also the graph I've shown with Kurzweil, technology develops irrespective of any value you attach to it. It just develops.
Absolutely.
And it so happens that thanks to Zug and the positive environment, Vitalik, also in Zug, had a friendly environment, and they came up with their next platform, blockchain, Ethereum blockchain. So the decentralized application for computing. Via the smart contract, via this new idea to build a platform for computing software. And on it goes, and as I mentioned, then on that platform, I think that's a key thing that sometimes gets a little bit forgotten. Around end of November, I think it was 2015, it was that Fabian Vogelsteller came with that new standardization, ERC20,
exactly.
The famous ERC, that allowed then people to create on top of that their own token ideas.
And it started the ICO boom.
And with that, then it became so simple for those who knew a little bit about technology, they understood immediately this is an easy one. And don't forget, in the meantime, Bitcoin and Ethereum came slowly but surely back in the arena, mainly Bitcoin. Ethereum had its first accidents.
Yes, oh, the DAO hack.
The DAO hack was one where decentral discussions kicked in.
Yes.
You know how central actually is Ethereum, and we had the split, the fork with Ether Classic, as you know. And but nonetheless, people on the Bitcoin side, they had their wins, and here comes those ideas with tokens, financing, and ICO was born in the broader context, I would say, of crowd sales.
Exactly.
With the technical means of tokening.
And how do you see the field of tokens evolving? Do you think, because Tom, at the end, he was mentioning a book where the author believes, for example, in 300 years, we will be able to tokenize our time, essentially.
Yes.
Do you believe that we're going into that direction where everything will be tokenized, or are you taking, like, you know, a step back and thinking, okay, maybe financial things will be tokenized, but not everything, not time entirely? How do you see, like, you know, tokens?
I think it's fair to say that the science fiction books we had so far, almost surprisingly, with the gadgets they have shown, like a phone, etc., they all came. I think it's fair to say that our limited brain probably is not able to predict, based on the speed of technological acceleration, what's going to be in 300 years, looking at what happened at the past 100 years or 300 years, and assuming that this acceleration, and probably that's a safe prediction, that it continues to accelerate. So I wouldn't go 300 years, I would go, like Kurzweil said, with the singularity is near. I would say the next 30, 40 years, as I mentioned also Peter Diamandis, when the energy question, which is so hotly debated these days,
we'll go into that in a bit.
Anyway, so probably the next 50 years is a dramatic change of pattern. And if tokenization is the word to use, I make a claim, maybe tokenization in itself is overtaken by something brand new because it's going so fast.
And what do you think that it could take, you know, overtake tokenization? If you have any idea.
Yes, I think our brains will be linked to the cloud.
Okay.
We have immediate knowledge.
Yes.
I have instantaneous knowledge when I talk to you, who you are, as much as you're happy to give away, to share. Maybe the concept of private and public is completely redesigned. Oh. And with that total immersion in instantaneous access to everything in the moment it starts to emerge will give us a complete different level setting. So I tend, like theoretical physicists sometimes do, thinking through everything, they land in the territory of spiritualism.
But it is where we should land, I think, you know. It's everything about is about, like, you know, emotions and spirituality at the end, I think. And technology should connect us, like human beings, I mean.
Maybe, you know, we had slavery some hundred years ago and we got rid of that trauma in a hard way and with bloody wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as I sense it, we continue to be, as humankind, still to a certain extent, we are all slaves yet.
Whoa.
And maybe, I insist, technology, as it starts to become autonomous, artificial intel, machine learning that feeds in itself, mm-hmm. maybe those things will help us to become better versions. Who knows?
Do you think, just to, you know, since we're on the topic,
yes,
do you think that technology can also be biased? So imagine, since we're discussing a bit of AI, artificial intelligence, or even AGI, I mean, do you think that, you know, there's a danger that if we teach the machine, like, you know, wrong data sets,
yes.
there can be a big problem?
Yes, of course. And this is one of those many social, deep social discussions mm-hmm. about the social contract yes. that we want to have. Of course there is bias because it's still human beings doing the thing to a large extent.
Exactly.
No wonder it's spoiled by biases. Of course the other side says, no, it's not spoiled, it's the right thing. And there we are with that puzzle picture I showed.
Yes.
For some it's the ways, for some it's the faces,
yes,
for some it's the dancers,
exactly.
for some it's the female, the
exactly.
woman. And so, yes, as long as human beings with their sort of limited brain, but what's happening at the same time, I think we start to build intelligence to a certain extent, but let's not be too naive.
Of course.
There will be fights.
Mm-hmm.
There will be people who defend status quo. And maybe those fights are as severe as they were in the past when we looked at the war. So I'm not just saying we go to spiritualism and let's be all happy and wait for the good old future, so to speak. No. I think we have to be extremely alert along the way because new concepts will emerge. But topic for me is these are tools and it's the human being that uses tools. You have a knife, the knife per se is neutral, is agnostic. In the hands of an operator it can do wonders. In the hands of a killer it can do devastating effects.
That is a beautiful message, I think. Technology is absolutely just a tool, it's the way that we use it. And since we're on the topic of, like, you know, fighting and discussions, well, you know that the crypto space is very prone to people attacking each other, right? There's loads of maximalism, this is better than that, and our currency, our blockchain is better than yours. During, like, this conference, I've heard a lot that blockchain, Bitcoin in this case, wastes a lots of energy, but I've never heard anybody saying that without that energy waste, it is not secure.
Yes.
What is your opinion on that?
Oh, I like your opinion, also in terms of that's really also my understanding, plus to what I know. I'm always careful with the news flow you take and maybe biasly select, sure. of course, as well. As everybody, so I have to also disclose that. I'm a human being and selecting my things. But as far as I can take, it's the Bitcoin proof of work is using produced energy. And as far as I can see, the location of the miners goes to places where there is non-storable, produced, abundant energy, mainly in the renewable area, even in China.
Mm-hmm.
And if that energy is not used, it's just wasted. So Bitcoin in itself is not triggering an extra creation it's using. So that's a huge difference. Second, exactly what you said, the proof of work concept, it's the very essence of having energy injected to make secure the whole system secure. Of course, that was not a bug, the famous, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Exactly.
And third, and here I'm with Ray Kurzweil again, because he looked at renewables. Actually, it was Larry Page and Ray Kurzweil when they looked at solar energy and they saw a doubling every 2 years. Also in solar energy contribution to the whole energy contribution to the world. And if that doubling continues, you can even alone on solar energy predict that in about 10, 15 years, the whole world is free of free of charge energy because we learned to use the solar energy and many other renewables, of course, as well. And maybe even high-tech stuff like fusion finally becomes amenable. And here I draw a lot of thinking from Diamandis, Kurzweil, and we should not be too, let's say, frustrated about all these things. Maybe Bitcoin, to add, because there are developers working in itself, slowly but surely adapt as well that. But for the time being, I'm happy to know that developers on Bitcoin are rather conservative guys.
Exactly, because without being conservative, I mean, we risk destroying the the protocol, we risk destroying Bitcoin. And having that in mind, what do you think about, for example, Ethereum changing from proof of work to proof of stake? In my opinion, I think it's okay because Ethereum is not Bitcoin. It's a different application and it might make sense for maybe for scalability. Although personally, I don't think that scalability is a real problem. I think it may be in the future if real companies start really using Ethereum. But for now, it's kind of working. I understand what they're doing. Do you think that will eventually, will it happen something similar to Bitcoin? Or in your opinion, do you believe that it's just too risky and, you know, people like the developers are just like, you know, they want to keep it, you know, secure?
Yes, yes. Also, first of all, congratulations to all these people who take the risk.
Absolutely.
To go into Ether 2.0. I don't know everything going on there, obviously, because even the developers themselves are developing
exactly.
ideas.
Exactly.
But what we know, Ether 2.0 phase zero is going for the beacon chain, sort of the spine to it, and they will add the sharding, etc., etc. It's a major risk they take, but the aspirations are high. I think scalability, speed, programmability, but also I think there were some children, I don't know how to say that in English, Kinderkrankheiten we call it, you translate
then.
they knew all along that some of the concepts they have, let's say Solidity as a programming language, that was done very fast, very good. Gavin Anderson is a big supporter to that. But like in internet, when they went from JavaScript to WebAssembly, for example, I think they knew that at Ethereum Foundation that they have also to step up to make it a better foundation also from a purely technology point of view, the programming language, etc., etc. So here I stop because I'm not a developer and I don't really know, but I have high respect for the risk they take, and their aspiration is probably to have a very dominant platform which fulfills parameters in almost every aspect you look at to the max compared to the next best competitor, and it's their good right. And we're gonna see. We from Bitcoin Swiss obviously are superbly close to that evolution because we have clients with a lot of Ether 1.0, and
amazing.
We wanna be sure that when the transition takes place, that we can accompany, that's our role as Bitcoin Swiss, our clients to the transition, that they don't lose all of a sudden some of their hard-earned earnings on Ether 1.
Just one last question, and it is about Bitcoin Swiss.
Yes.
Of course. If you could tell me, how has the business been evolving, how it is now compared to how it was, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yes.
In terms of customers, has it been grown? Have you seen loads of OTC customers?
Yeah.
Many people interested in Bitcoin?
Yeah. We have seen, quite frankly, mainly that Bitcoin Swiss, in order to further profit the opportunities in the market, we have to get licensed as well. So very directly, it has a bit of a disciplinary effect on the company. It has a bit of an admin load, obviously. We have grown from 20 to 120 people, and some of those people we had to take on board, obviously, is because we want to go banking, we want to go broker-dealer. Why would we care to do that? We are, at the core, a crypto house, but we need those licenses to fully play the possibilities in the arena. Let's take, again, tokenization. So many of those tokens will be securities. You need a broker-dealer license to do business, operate with those tokens, deemed securities. So it's a natural evolution, which makes, let's say, in summary, also Bitcoin Swiss, to a certain extent, goes mainstream and participates and cooperates and contributes to the ecosystem.
Beautiful. Arthur, thank you so much for the interview.
You.
I mean, it was amazing. And I wish, like, the best of luck to Bitcoin Swiss.
Thank you.
It has been one of
Come to Zurich, to Zug once you're...